Welcome to Fast Track Your Book Proposal. I'm Andrea Cinnamond, and I'm working behind the scenes here supporting Lisa Tanner on this call tonight. An authority on book writing and publishing, and winner of the Silver Stevie Award for Coach Mentor of the Year, Lisa Tanner guides experts, entrepreneurs, and visionaries to joyfully write and publish their books. Lisa has been quoted in the New York Times, featured on ABC News, and more. She blogs for the business journals and Thrive Global, serving on the faculty of Harvard Medical School's publishing course and teaches award-winning book writing courses. Lisa Tanner's clients have received 5- and 6-figure book deals from a large variety of publishers, from Random House and HarperCollins to niche and university publishers. Her clients' books have been featured by Oprah, on NPR, The Today Show, Good Morning America, and all over the national media, including The New York Times, Cosmopolitan, Women's Health, Forbes, and more. Again, during the call, there'll be chances to speak with Lisa, and so *2 on your phone to raise your hand. If a question comes to you during the presentation, jot it down on your handout or in your notes. And if it's not answered during the call, you can ask the questions at the end. So welcome, Lisa.
Hello. Thank you so much, Andrea. And thank you to everyone on this call. I'm so thrilled to be here with you. Writing and publishing a book is such a huge accomplishment, and I've seen it change so many lives, including my own. So I'm very excited to be part of your process and hopefully provide information tonight that will really make a difference in your life and your work and for your book. I'd love to hear a little about why people are here, what you're here for, and what you're hoping to get out of tonight's call. So feel free, if you're on the web, to type in the chat about why you're here, what you hope to get. And if you're on a phone, you can press *2. And I thought I'd share a little bit about my first experience with a book proposal. It was many years ago when I first was working on what became The Ultimate Guide to Transforming Anger, which was eventually published by Health Communications. But it was a very long and winding road. And I went to my first writers' conference at the International Women's Writers Guild, and I was in that audience. It was sort of the first night where they had they had a big gathering and introduced the one agent, literary agent, who was there, Rita Rosenkranz. And then at the end of that sort of introduction, we all got up, and I was walking with a bunch of people and didn't sort of even see where they were, you know, kind of all who was with the group. But I sort of just ended up at this table with the one agent who was there, Rita Rosenkranz. And within, it must have been 5 minutes, it seemed, everybody at our table got up except for me and Rita. And so there I was alone with the literary agent. And she was so helpful and gave me lots of good information about writing a successful proposal, and gave me information that I still use to this day. So it was really kind of magical, and I hope that tonight will be somewhat magical for you. So today's call is going to focus on nonfiction. I mostly help people with self-help books, health books, how-to, and business books, some spiritual type books as well. And there's some variety, some memoir. So if you're writing other kinds of books, some of the material will probably apply, but the focus is going to be on nonfiction. So I am going to ask, if your book is fiction or a children's book, since that's not really my area, just email me directly at lisa@lisatanner.com if you have some questions or need some help, and I may be able to connect you with the right person. So I'm kind of looking at what people have said, and Leilani, I hope I pronounced your name right, but wonderful that you're here. Leilani says, I have an idea for a book that I've been trying to ignore for years, but it won't stop rattling around in my mind, and I don't know where to start. So we're going to focus on book proposals, but remind me at the end of the call, and I will talk a bit about where to start, because it is such an important piece, and I know people struggle with it, and I want to give you some takeaways for that. Sounds like, Priscilla, you're in a similar situation and also feeling a little intimidated. So hopefully by the end of tonight's call, you guys won't feel quite so intimidated, and you'll feel inspired and know some of your next steps. And some of you may be on this call thinking, I really don't even know if I need a book proposal. I don't know if I want to self-publish or traditionally publish. So, you know, we can talk a little about that again, too. Just remind me at the end of the call, because I didn't put that in the agenda, but I could definitely touch on that, because I have a feeling, given what some of you are typing in, that that may be something that you'd like to have a little more information about, you know, how to make that decision. And it's certainly a question I help people with as well, to unpack that, because it does require both understanding the pros and cons of each, and also what publishers will be expecting, and what may really fit best with your vision. So I have been working with aspiring authors on their book proposals for well over a decade. And for many years, I've taught the Advanced Book Proposal Workshop for Harvard Medical School's publishing course. And I've helped many dozens of published authors. And it's just such a joy for me to see what happens when, but both through the process, which is really an amazing process of writing the book, writing the proposal, and then actually seeing what happens when that book comes out, and the lives it touches, and the change it brings to the author's life as well. So I thought, you know, I might just start with some recent news, sharing kind of what's possible, right, and kind of give you some inspiration as well. So I thought I'd start with a book that just got published this month, earlier in September. I worked with Linnell Schneeberg on her book proposal for Become Your Child's Sleep Coach. And the book was published by Hachette, and 3 days after publication, her book was featured, and she was quoted in an article on Yale Medical School's blog. So I emailed her Monday to congratulate her and also ask, you know, what else has transpired? I'm not seeing it on your website. And I also encouraged her to update her website page, because this is really common. I think the book comes out, and the author starts doing some PR, and they forget to put that on their media page. But that's really important, because then more media will, you know, producers of shows and journalists will see the press you've already gotten, and it will get them more interested in having you either on their show or interviewing you. So definitely get that media up there right away. But she was quoted in a Wall Street Journal article, and they mentioned her book after the book came out, and she's been featured on her local news station, and Parade Magazine did a piece on her book, which is great, because that's a big national publication and reaches a ton of people. So her book actually changed our lives, because Become Your Child's Sleep Coach helped my son get empowered to sleep in his bed and eventually become a much better sleeper as well, and all our family got a much better night's sleep. So that book already helped me before it even got published, but I know it's making a difference in a lot of lives, and exciting to see. I also thought I'd mention Carla Naumberg, because her book came out in August, and I worked with her on her third book proposal, and it was published by Workman Publishing. It's called How to Stop Losing Your SHRT with Your Kids, and has a wonderful, playful tone, and it's been exciting to see her as well, just being interviewed a lot, and again, reaching so many more people because of that, because of the book and the publicity it's getting. Another author that I worked with is Victoria Dunkley. She was in my Bring Your Book to Life program, and then we worked together on her book proposal. And since her book came out, her book is Reset Your Child's Brain, she's been on Good Morning America twice. She's been a panelist in-person panels, including something recently with Paula Poundstone, who's been really influenced by Victoria's book, and she's also been in a lot of online summits about children and their brains and learning and their health. And she's really seen now as a leading authority in her field, and that's really due to this book, Reset Your Child's Brain. And then a couple authors I worked with, every year it seems that one or two authors I work with have won a Nautilus Award, and Dr. Steven Snyder was one of this year's authors to win. His book is called Love Worth Making, and it's published by St. Martin's Press. He got a six-figure book deal, and he won the Gold Nautilus Award this year in the memoir category. And his book as well has gotten lots of national press, and it really brings new life and passion to the lives of couples. So one last thing I thought I'd mention is that I just had an author sign a high five-figure book deal this August. While the details are under wraps, I'm going to be sharing later some of the things that really helped her secure that book deal. So lots of exciting things are happening for these authors, and you could be next. These tips tonight could help, and I hope they will. And I will share many of the strategies that I used with the authors I mentioned and other authors as well that contributed to their book proposals, attracting agents and attracting publishers. So please find the worksheet. Maybe some of you have already printed out the worksheet, but there is a worksheet that you got in your emails, and it's also at the top right of your screen if you're on the web. And that worksheet, it's a strategy sheet, can help you in taking notes tonight, because I basically created spaces where you can fill in the answers to some of the things that I promised we'd discuss on the call. And if you don't have that, no worries, just take notes in whatever way works for you. So let's see. I think we'll start with the three must-haves that every publisher wants to see. And one of the biggest ones is maybe the most intimidating for writers, and that is platform. And platform means your reach. Platform means your mailing list, your social media presence, your online presence in general, articles, you know, places you're being quoted, TV, video, all of those things, right? And also your speaking. And speaking is actually a really great one because publishers know that sells books. And podcasts is also a really great part of an author platform. Now, you can't do everything, and tonight we're not going to talk about doing everything and being everywhere. It really is about figuring out where your audience hangs out and what's going to work for you too, what's going to be enjoyable and what plays with your strengths and skills. But publishers are going to want to see that you're already reaching people, and particularly people in your target market, not just anybody. You know, if this is a book for parents and your target market are auto mechanics, if this is a book for parents and your email list are auto mechanics, you know, that's not going to work. It needs to be your target market and how you reach them already. So shortly we'll give you some tips and strategies about developing that platform. And I know a few of you had asked when you signed up some questions about platforms, so I promise we will be covering that. The second thing I'll say is a must-have every publisher wants to see is that you have a good-sized market. And it doesn't mean that it can't be a niche market, especially for smaller or mid-sized publishers. A niche can be a great market because, you know, that can be very clear, like, oh, this book is for me, when it's a niche. And it's very much about solving a problem of that market. A bigger publisher is going to want to see, you know, a bigger market than what small and medium-sized publishers are happy with. And I'll give you an example. When I was working with Dr. Carrie Barron, when we first met, actually, before we were working together at Harvard Medical School's publishing course, she pitched a book, and she was calling it I'm Creative, But I Can't Create. And I said, you know, I think that your audience is maybe a little bigger and more desperate than how you're seeing them. I think that once we were working together on our first book concept consultation, I said, you know, I think it's really the people you work with as a therapist. I think that it's She's a psychiatrist. I think that's people who are depressed, anxious, or unhappy, and that's a really big market and a market that's desperate for what you have to offer. And as I kind of voiced that, I realized just this title came to me, The Creativity Cure, and it's one of the titles I'm most proud of, and I think really helped in securing that book deal. So, and she got a six-figure book deal. So a good-sized market and one that really needs and wants what you have to offer. And again, you know, depending on the size publisher you're looking at, the size of the market may vary. And sometimes a niche is actually very good. It doesn't have to be the broadest market. It could be just the most hungry market or the underserved market. And the third thing that is a real must-have with publishers is freshness, right? It's got to stand out in some way from books that are already on the market. So it might be that your book contains some new research, some fresh perspectives, maybe a fresh voice. And I think a good example is Love Worth Making that really brought a fresh perspective to lovemaking. And so think about, you know, what is unique about what you have to offer? You know, why are people attracted to what you're teaching or what you're offering in your speaking or your consulting or your writing, and bring that to your book and bring that to the tone and voice of your book. So next, I said I'd talk about how to avoid the dreaded slush pile. And the first thing that's really important is just, you know, play by the rules. So publishers want to see that you do what they expect. And if they have submissions guidelines on their website, you know, follow those. If they say they don't want phone calls, don't call them. If they say, you know, send a Microsoft Word file, don't send a PDF. Really do what they ask. And it starts with the query. Generally, you're not going to send a book proposal first. You're going to send a query letter, but you're going to have that proposal absolutely ready. So as soon as that they say yes to that query, then you immediately send the proposal to them. But if you send the proposal first, that's, you know, a good way to get ignored or rejected because it's not something they requested, unless on their submissions guideline they do say to do that. And some university publishers will sometimes have you go ahead and directly submit a proposal. But that's more rare, I would say. The next thing, and the same with agents, right? You query them first, and you need to decide. You know, I would say in general, if your platform is big enough to attract an agent, start by querying agents. And if that doesn't get anywhere, but you feel like you do have a marketable book, and maybe you get some good feedback from agents, but they're just not, you know, they feel like it's not big enough for them to take on, then you might go directly to publishers. Because sometimes an agent sees that a book has some potential, but thinks, you know, I'm going to need to put some work in here, and this. Maybe the author doesn't have a huge platform, or maybe it's just a smaller market, and so the advance is likely to not be that big, and they may think, you know, I'm only going to make maybe $1,000 on this book. I can't afford to put in all that time. So it doesn't mean the book isn't going to get a publisher, but you need to go directly to maybe smaller or niche publishers to get that. That book deal. So, but again, so when you want to avoid that slush pile, and the slush pile is, you know, that pile that they often don't get to for, you know, 6 months or maybe longer, send your query first and send a really good query, and then follow up with the proposal. And the second piece of that is make sure that you format it correctly. So you're going to have a cover page. You're going to have all the sections that they normally ask for in a book proposal. You're going to, it doesn't matter so much about the order. Different publishers, different agents look for different order, and it's okay if you don't have it in the exact order they say on their submissions guidelines. But you do want the correct format, double-spaced, 12-point font, indent the first line of each paragraph. You know, there's certain things that they just expect to see. And if you look at How to Write a Book Proposal by Michael Larson and Jody Ryan, you'll find all of that information there. I also have a lot of resources and articles on my website, and Jane Friedman is also a great resource with a lot of articles. So the third thing for avoiding the slush pile is to really hook the agent or publisher from the beginning. So that means your cover page. And so the title should really excite them. It should be really compelling. And we'll talk about some other stuff that might be on that cover page in a minute. And then, you know, when they turn the page and after the table of contents for the proposal, they look at that overview and the first sentence should grab them. And we'll talk later about some good grabs. And another thing is just, you know, punctuation. You really want it to hire a proofreader or have somebody really great to proofread your proposal, because you do not want any punctuation errors. You want them to look at that proposal and say, this is going to be a really easy author to work with. You know, the agent is going to say, I'm not going to have to do a lot of cleanup work on this proposal or on the manuscript when it's time to work with this author. And likewise, the publisher is going to look at it and say, wow, this is in great shape, and this author is going to be easy to work with. So do make sure you dot your I's and cross your T's. And I see Heather is asking, what's the third must-have? So I can repeat that, Andrea, I'll just repeat it. So the third must-have for publishers was freshness. And Andrea, if you have the notes, you could write what the freshness was. And if not, I'll put it down later. So how do you start your proposal for maximum impact? Well, I have one agent I work with, and she sold quite a few of my clients' books, who says, have that platform hook in your very first paragraph. Have that detail that shows that you have a platform. So, for example, I worked quite some time ago with Kathy LeMay, and her book was The Generosity Plan, and it was about philanthropy and, for everybody, right, philanthropy for everybody. And she had been on Oprah, so I said, we got to lead with that. So she told me the story that got her on Oprah, and we kind of painted a scene, and it was Oprah saying, you know, it was in quotes, Oprah saying, that girl, I want that one and that story. She sang it to her producer, and then the producer calls Kathy, and then we say, you know, Kathy, here's the story, right, that excited Oprah, and then we tell that story that Oprah got so excited about and that Kathy got to share on the Oprah show. So that's just one example of a way to start a proposal with impact. Another is humor. And one really big one is some counterintuitive research. So if people think one thing and the research shows something else, that's a really good way to start your proposal, because also it shows that it's going to be somewhat controversial, and it's the kind of thing that, you know, could get you some publicity, right? That the talk shows love to have somebody with counterintuitive information. That's the opposite of what we all think. And also you might have something that just arouses the curiosity of the agent or publisher. So those are a few ways you might start. Also to just show what a huge market there is and the desperate needs. So some statistics in that arena might be very good as well. So I promised also I would share the tip that helped lead to a six-figure book deal for a client of mine. And so one is just getting that audience really clear. So again, for the creativity cure, you know, she was thinking creative people who feel stuck, right? I'm creative, but I can't create. And so we got clearer that it's really people who are anxious, depressed, or unhappy. And then also getting clear, well, what's the promise they want, right? They want a cure for that, and that's where the creativity cure came in. I think I had another example of that. of getting clear of the audience. Oh, yeah. So there, I promised I'd also talk about this recent five-figure book deal that came through. I can't tell you the author of the book yet, but what I can say is that she was going for a broader audience, which was fine. But when we talked it over, so she got a great agent with this wonderful book proposal she did. And then the agent said, you know, I like this audience, but I also want to try some Christian publishers. And so let's do both. And it was actually the Christian publishers that really got excited and made offers for the book. And so she actually narrowed down the book a little bit. And, you know, so sometimes we will kind of narrow and go for that narrow niche because, you know, it just makes sense in the marketplace. And so there, again, you know, narrowing down is what led to that book deal. Another thing with Carrie Barron's book, The Creativity Cure, was that she didn't have much of a platform. She taught writing at Columbia University, and then she is a psychiatrist. She was in private practice at the time. And so there wasn't this huge platform that, you know, often is important for publishers and for agents. So as we brainstormed about it, she said, you know, my husband, who's also a physician, is he has a little more platform than I do. He's been on CBS This Morning, and he also has written a couple times he was on CBS. And then he also wrote an editorial that was in the New York Times. So she said, you know, what do you think of my co-authoring with him? And she would write most of the book, but he was a hand surgeon, and she felt that he had some interesting ideas about making things with your hands, and that was part of the creativity cure. So they did co-write it just in that way, and I think it really helped that he brought some platform to the table. And again, they got a six-figure book deal. I don't think that would have happened without some platform in place. Another tip in terms of getting a six-figure book deal, I worked with Dr. Craig Malkin, who's a psychologist, and he wrote Rethinking Narcissism, and at the time when we first started working together, he really didn't have much of a platform. So a lot of what we did was to work on how do you develop that platform. And a similar thing with Dr. Steven Snyder, who also, he's an MD, and he's a sex therapist, and he also got a six-figure book deal. So it was very much a need with both of them to work on that platform. And they both took a couple years, maybe even more than two, to develop that platform so that they had a really airtight book proposal. So let's talk a little bit about platform building tips. And I do promise that we'll also get to your questions, too. And I'm just going to take a sip of water, too. So one person I worked with, and I mentioned her before, is Dr. Victoria Dunkley, a psychiatrist who, when we first started working together, actually, you know, she's an interesting case, too, in terms of the market. We talked about, you know, really identifying your market and also identifying the book. So I'm going to take a step back from platform building for a minute to talk a little bit about her process, because when she came to me, she had all these different things that she saw that were important in mental health for children. And often people would send her the hardest cases, kids who were on these like cocktails of multiple medications, psychotropic drugs, and really just very, very strong medications. And kids that they felt they couldn't help. And one of the first things she did was to take these kids off any kind of screen and Wi-Fi. And at the time, it was easier to do. Now it's a little harder to do that completely. But when she did that, most of these kids either completely their problems went away because the screens were really the culprit, or it just got much, much better. And then there were some additional things to do that had to do with diet or sleep or other things. But the screens were the biggest culprit. So she was going to write about a whole bunch of different things like screens and diet and sleep and a bunch of things that she saw as important. But as we talked, I said, you know, I really think the book is this focus thing. It's about the screens. And she developed this diagnosis of electronic screen syndrome. And it actually made it into that manual, the physician's desk reference. And, you know, now she's on Wikipedia as the person who coined that term, and I remember the two of us brainstorming, like, what is the term going to be? Because she knew that it was really important to give a name to this and make it clear, you know, what an effect these screens had. So in any case, then she needed to do some platform building, and she did a little blogging on her own, and I suggested she pitch Psychology Today. And actually, Dr. Malkin, who generously shared his pitch with her through me, and that helped her to pitch to Psychology Today, and she started a column called Mental Wealth. And one of the things I suggested was to comment on other people's posts and share other people's posts. You know, on social media, it really is about community and about supporting each other towards a common goal, right? Getting this information out and working together as a community. So I had signed up, you know, for I think it was like the morning news digest, right, on the Huffington Post. And in that morning news digest was an article on, like, why you shouldn't give kids a cell phone or something. And I immediately sent it to Vicki and said, you know, respond to this immediately. And if you can, link to one of your posts that's really relevant on Psychology Today. And she did that. And because that post went viral, the one from the Huffington Post, she was able to she got, you know, tens of thousands of additional views on her Psychology Today post because of that. And she got offers for interviews. She got put on panels because of that. So it wasn't even directly her post, but it was a comment on a post that led to all of this great synergy and continues, you know, those relationships that she formed by doing that comment continue today to really get her message out and continue to result in new opportunities for her. So, you know, I would say subscribe to these sort of morning emails from different, you know, you can for Medium or Kevin MD or whatever it is that's in your field, right? Forbes, whatever, you know, whatever people in your audience read, so that you're getting the relevant posts about whatever you pick as your interest areas. And that will help you see what's getting out there, and you can immediately comment as soon as you see a post that's, you know, that's relevant to what you're writing about. And I would also, you know, get, in addition to news alerts, I would also suggest that you do like a TalkWalker alert or Google alert on certain keywords, so that when those keywords are in the news, you get to see, you know, the articles that get printed about that. And also do news alerts. You can do them on particular people if you want, including yourself, so you know when you show up in the news or in somebody's blog post or when somebody copies one of your blog posts, which can happen too. So Vicki was very successful, and one of the things that she was nervous about too was that she felt that she'd done all this research to see what was out there. It wasn't primary research, it was secondary research, right? She was seeing what does the research show about screens and children's brains. And she was really doing it before, you know, there were very, very few people doing it at the time. So she was concerned that somebody could read her posts and just really kind of take all the work she did and then get credit for it, right? Because it wasn't like it was her original research. She was just putting together what all the research said. So we developed a strategy where she would blog tangentially. So she blogged about the effects of screens on Tourette's syndrome, for instance. So she wasn't kind of blogging the big main idea of the book, but she saved that. And that's a strategy that, particularly if you don't have a huge platform and your research isn't original, but you're kind of putting together, a hypothesis or putting together some kind of theory based on what you're seeing, then you may want to hold back some of your information till the book comes out or till it's closer to the launch date of your book. Another platform tip I would give you is get on podcasts. It's really a growing area, and publishers know that podcasts can be very successful for book sales because you have these niche audiences, and they tend to be educated people who spend money, so they're more likely to buy books. And so podcasts are great. In addition, speaking is also really, really good because people tend to like to buy a book and take the author home and continue with the material that they got in your talk or in your training. So that's a big one too that publishers like to see. But go where your audience hangs out, right? If your audience hangs out online, then don't try to get them to come to some event. Meet them online, meet them where they tend to hang out. Another thing that I see is, first of all, you need to have a website. And if you have a website for your work that's not quite the same as the book, you may want to have a separate author website. But if you already have a website with your name and your work and your book really go together, then just stick with one site because, you want to be blogging on one site. You want to have everything on one site and not take visitors off the site. But you want to have a free gift on your website so that you start to grow your mailing list. I'm just going to take another sip of water. Let's see. Oh, and then, another thing, which my assistant, Jerry Lafferty, is on the phone. I know she's going to laugh when she hears this one. But it's that you really need to learn the rules about email lists because email has changed so dramatically. Gmail puts so much in the promotions folder, and a lot of things end up in spam or trash because of the way these email providers are now sorting things. So, for instance, you need to avoid salesy kind of language. You need to have not too many links in your emails. So learn those rules because if you're trying to grow your email list, but you have, 5 or 10 links in every email, your emails are most likely going to go to spam and you'll have fewer people actually even seeing them. So this is a really big deal. I'm planning a blog post on this eventually, interviewing the expert that we hired to help us deal with this. But, the sooner you deal with it, the better, because you can prevent a lot of the issues that many of us who've been in the business a long time are having to deal with our email list. Let's see. So I also said that I would talk about this recent 5-figure deal. And so just a couple more things that really helped this author get and secure her book deal and also secure this wonderful agent who got her the book deal. And that was to find a best-selling author who was willing to write the foreword. And I really had to push her on it. And, she tried a bunch of authors and didn't get anywhere. And I just, I said, keep going, because I know that this agent really wants to see it. And I don't want to get a no from this agent. I really want a yes. So eventually she was able to get a commitment for a forward. It wasn't actually even a best-selling author that she knew personally. So, sometimes you have to go further afield, let everybody know that you're looking for a forward writer, and maybe even ask your network, your circle, who knows so-and-so or so-and-so. Another thing she did was to secure some speaking gigs well into the future for large audiences, and that was, again, something I pushed her, I really pushed for her to do because she didn't have those secured, and I said, look, we need these things secured so we can put this in the book proposal. So those are some tips that, you know, that can really help you as you think about your proposal. And if you're feeling overwhelmed by everything I'm suggesting, you know, all these authors started with at the beginning, right? And most of the people that I work with don't have much of a platform. Some of them don't have a website. Some of them don't have any kind of business. You know, they're really starting at the beginning. And yet, if you take the steps and work step by step, you will get there. So I encourage you, you know, don't get overwhelmed, but just figure out what's my next step. And speaking of next steps, before I answer your questions, I did want to talk a little bit about my book proposal course that's coming up. I only teach it once a year, and I have to say, I think it's a really wonderful course for diving in and getting that guidance so that you're not overwhelmed, so that you can go step by step, really get a solid book concept and structure for your book before you even dive into the proposal. And so that's something, if you join the course, that we would work on together before the course starts. And then getting that accountability and support and a community where you're supporting each other without having to put a lot of time into that support, right? You're not reading each other's work or anything like that, but you're getting just the kind of support you need, just the right amount to keep you engaged and motivated and get some feedback, but really focus for the most part on your writing, because that's what's going to get your book proposal written. So Fast Track Your Book Proposal is the name of this course, and it's there are three levels. There's bronze, silver, and gold, but in all three levels, you would get a book concept consultation with me, and then you know, we get clear on the concept as well as the structure. And then in class, we go through the different sections of a book proposal and the things that people do wrong, you know, that you want to avoid, and all the things that are going to really make that section shine and make it really compelling to publishers and to agents. So we'll have 4 weeks of classes, and we'll meet Wednesday evenings, and then we will also, I usually do a bonus call, so I'll be doing a bonus call probably on the platform building, because people often, you know, want a little extra on that. So we'll have a bonus call in November. And all the information is at the link that Andrea has typed in. It's lisatenner.com/book-proposal. And so you're welcome to go to that page. It is a long page because, you know, it is an investment, this program, and I wanted to make sure you really see everything that you need to make your decision. I will say, because a book proposal is, you know, sometimes a book is just not going to be marketable. Maybe it's too small an audience, or maybe, you know, maybe you're writing fiction and this is for nonfiction. So I do suggest, if you're interested in the course, just call me or email me before signing up, and we can just assess whether I think, yes, I think this is marketable, I think it's a good fit for the program, I think I can help you, because, you know, I certainly don't want you spending money for something that's not going to be a fit for you. So it's good for us to talk a little bit about ahead of time. And, you know, sometimes they're just tweaks, too, that it sounds at first like, oh, I'm not sure how marketable. Oh, what if you did this? And suddenly, you know, there's a way to see how marketable it would be. And also we can assess a little bit about, well, you know, do you have the platform, or are you willing to do some of the things that you would need, well, to do what you would need to develop that platform that would interest publishers. And so you know, that's going to be part of the process, is just getting in touch with me to make sure it's a fit if you're interested. And then you can sign up. And as I mentioned, there's a bronze program. So that is the workbook that helps you with the pre-work, quick start to kickstart your book, and then the book proposal guidebook that's going to help you through the 4 weeks of writing that proposal. And then these highly interactive teleclasses that have all the advantages of live workshop, because we can do stuff in pairs, we can I know we're on Instant Teleseminar tonight, but I deliver that course on Maestro Conference so that we have a lot of interactivity. And then there is an optional accountability partner system to help you keep writing and committed to the process. And then there's some bonuses as well, really great bonuses. So you can read all about that on the website. But that's the Bronze Program. And right now the Bronze Program through September 22nd, so through Sunday, I have an early bird offer, $900 off, and there is a one payment or two payment program, so you can look at that on the website. There's also the silver program, which includes everything that's in the bronze, plus continued feedback on your outline until you're confident you have the right one, and then detailed feedback on your entire book proposal. So once through on the proposal, and that includes up to 50 pages of sample chapters. So I will do that personally. So that's the silver. And then the gold, you have multiple edits, feedback and editing on your sample chapters, so up to four times, and feedback and editing on all the sections of your book proposal three times. So, and you get up to four additional private coaching calls so we can brainstorm about your promotion plan and your platform building and come up with some really great ideas. We can brainstorm the overview and hooks that will really excite agents and publishers. And if you feel stuck, you can get a breakthrough. So lots of extra great stuff with that gold program. So, you know, you can choose the one that's best for you. And again, that may be another good reason to have a call together so you can decide which is the best for you. And the silver program is a $750 discount right now through September 22nd. And the gold is a $1,500 discount, so $1,500 discount. And I did want to mention some special bonuses that are available to you guys. The first is that the first seven people to sign up for any of the three tiers will get to attend a private group interview I'm going to have with my colleague, Michael Larson, who is the co-author of How to Write a Book Proposal, the fifth edition. He actually authored the first four on his own, and then he co-authored with Jody Ryan on the most recent one. And you'll get to ask Mike your burning questions. You can send them in ahead of time. You'll also get a chance to ask some more on the call. And so that's for the first seven people to sign up. And then there's a special gold program bonus. The first two people to sign up for the gold program are going to receive a free seat in my February-March Bring Your Book to Life program. So I've never done this before because it's a really big value. That program is, I charge, the full price is $5,997, so $6,000 program. And at the very steepest discount, Thanksgiving weekend, I offered for $4,500. So you're going to get the program free if you're one of the first two people to sign up for the gold program. And that bonus really is amazing. So you could potentially write your book proposal this fall and, you know, be sending it in to agents and publishers if it's ready in time, and then actually be working on writing that first draft of your whole book in the book Bring Your Book to Life program in February and March. So this is a really, really exciting bonus that I'm really thrilled to be offering you. And I'm happy to answer questions. Maybe we'll start with questions about the program, and then we'll go into your other questions. So anybody have a question about the Fast Track Your Book Proposal question? I know it's a lot of information, so you may not be ready to ask those questions, and you can definitely email me, lisa@lisatenner.com, and we can go over your questions individually, and you can also certainly call me. My phone number is 401-477-0886, and it's there in the chat box if you're on the web. But anybody have any questions about the Fast Track program? So press star 2 if you're on a phone, or just type it in the chat box if you have questions about the Fast Track Your Book Proposal program. So let's see. Okay, so that we've got a regular question. Anybody, before I go to the regular questions, anybody have a question about the program? I'm not seeing any program questions. So I think what I'll do is go ahead and launch into these questions, but feel free to bring it back to the program if you want or ask me individually. So Andrea and I went through the questions that people asked, and here were some that I thought were some of the most sort of ones that seemed that, you know, kind of most valuable to everybody. And so if I don't answer your question now, feel free to go ahead and email me too. But Andrea, do you want to start with reading the questions that we identified?
Thanks. Yep, I can. So Lorelei asked, can you begin writing the book proposal before your book is complete?
So the answer to that is yes, and actually generally we recommend doing that. We recommend writing some sample chapters and your chapter outlines or summaries and all the rest of the proposal and then writing the rest of the book, because when you write the book proposal, you might get feedback from agents or publishers that makes you decide to make some changes to the book. For instance, that book that we decided to pitch to Christian publishers. So now, you know, that changed some of the tone of the book. It changed some of the examples. So that was, you know, that was helpful to do before the whole book's written. Now, having said that, you know, that I often and maybe usually recommend that, I usually recommend that. I'm working on a book right now, and I just knew I had to write the whole book first. And then I'm going, and, you know, and then I'm writing the proposal. I have done little bits and pieces on the proposal, but I just knew that I cannot send this proposal out without figuring out what the whole book is, because I didn't feel like I knew the book well enough, you know, and I wanted to have a complete handle on it. So trust your instinct on it too.
All right, we have a question about the program, so I'm going to switch back to Leilani's question. To make the most of it, how much time should we anticipate spending on it each week during the course?
Oh, that's a great question. So I would say, you know, if you're going to make the absolute most of it, it would be ideal to be able to spend at least 7 hours, I would say. You know, 7 to 10 hours would be really ideal. If you can spend 4 to 5, you will make a lot of progress, but you might not have a full proposal by the end of the course. So, you know, I think, something like 4 or 5 hours a week, you'll get a lot done, but you'll probably still be working on your proposal after the course is over. Now, even if you do 7 to 10 hours, you know, it really depends on where your platform's at and, you know, if the book changes or something, it's possible you won't have the full proposal done by the end of October or beginning of November, but you'll have most, you know, I think most likely you would have most of it, you know, but everybody also has their own individual speed of working, and if you have really long chapters, it might take a little longer. You might need to put in more time if you want to have a first draft done by the end of class, so it does depend a little bit, too, on, you know, my book has kind of short chapters, but if your book has, you know, 25-page chapters, that could take a long time to write, depending on your how fast a writer you are. So you may want to factor that in and say, wow, I think I need to do 12 to 15. So so I would say, you know, 7 to 10, probably a minimum if you want to get most or all of your proposal done. And it could be, depending on the book, more like, you know, 12 or 15. And sometimes people do even more. But, you know, I'd say that's more rare.
Excellent. We have another question from Jeff. I'm set to grow my email list, and I've started growing my Facebook followers. Can you remind me how large an audience I need before approaching a traditional publisher?
So it's a wonderful question, and we all like wish we had that, you know, specific number to hand out. And I have talked to agents, I've talked to publishers to see if, you know, if they ever have any numbers, and they really don't. So what I can say is, you know, for a niche publisher, if you have a following of 5,000 or 10,000 or 15,000, like that might be enough. You know, I'm not saying like 15,000 Facebook followers who aren't engaged, right? That's sort of meaningless. But if you have, you know, a more modest following, but it's a niche audience, they're very engaged with you, and you know, so then, you know, that might be enough. But for a bigger publisher, they are probably looking for a bigger list and email list, for instance. So Hay House, for instance, wants to see 30 to 40,000 people on your mailing list. If you're writing a diet book, you know, hundreds of thousands may not be enough, but that's a diet book and you're competing with the Dr. Phils of the world, right? But let's say you're writing a plant-based diet book. I have clients who had very small, Michaela Carlson, she really started with no email list. And when we wrote to publishers, I think she maybe had 3,000 or 3,500. It was not huge, but she had a very strong grassroots connection to pretty much everybody in the plant-based diet field. And she'd been the executive director of T. Colin Campbell's foundation, and he was going to write the foreword to her book, which he did. So she had enough pieces in place that the smaller platform wasn't so much of an issue, and she got a nice book deal. So, you know, so much depends on the publisher and the particular audience and the type of book. So we really can't give numbers because they just don't apply. But it really is all over the map.
Okay. Mary says, I just had a book proposal rejected. How can I restart the process? Is it best to send query letters to potential publishers rather than full book proposals?
So, yes, it is absolutely best to send your query letter, and then when they've said, yes, I'm interested, then send them the proposal, unless it's a publisher that on their website they say, you know, send the proposal. Otherwise, you know, and that's, again, usually university publishers. So, generally, you are just going to send a query letter, and then when they say they're interested, you send the full proposal. But you have to have that proposal absolutely ready. So you send that query letter, and if 2 hours later they say, great, I'd like to see the proposal, you send it off, you know, immediately. And so it's important to do it that way. In terms of restarting the process, you probably can't go back to the same agents or publishers who rejected it. They really don't want you to do that unless they say to you, hey, we're really interested, but, you know, we'd like to see you rework X, Y, and Z. But most of the time, you can't go back to them, but you could maybe go to another agent or another publisher. What you don't want to do is go to a bunch of publishers and get some rejections and then go to agents, because you have to tell that agent, well, it was rejected by so-and-so, so-and-so, so-and-so. That's not going to help you very much. So you want to go to agents first if you are going to go to agents. And then if you don't have success with agents, you might try some smaller niche publishers. But you don't want to go to publishers and then agents. That's definitely not the way to go about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I will add another story too. So I worked with Dr. Scott Symington on his book, Freedom from Anxious Thoughts. And when we were working together, he said, you know, this system I have, which is a really amazing system for helping people deal, you know, who experience anxiety and really helping them to get in a calm state. And he said, you know, this system works for anxiety, it works for depression, it works for addiction, and those are all fields that, you know, there's huge audiences there. So we originally, I introduced him to a publisher who became his publisher, New Harbinger, and we went directly to publishers because he didn't have a huge, he had a nice platform, but it wasn't big enough for huge publishers. But he said, you know, New Harbinger is my first choice. So, rather than like taking all the time to build this platform to be exactly where an agent would want it, like if you can introduce me to New Harbinger, let's just do that. So I did, and the acquisitions editor was very interested, but he said, look, some big, really, you know, huge publishers may have had success in selling a book for a larger group, depressed, anxious, or unhappy. But in our experience, our books have done the best when we pick one of those. So I would like to just focus on anxiety. And so so there was this kind of working together with the acquisitions editor, and the author made changes to the book proposal before the acquisitions editor submitted it to the acquisitions board. And what happens is the acquisitions editor, when they feel that they're ready to pitch a book, then this is a book they want to buy, they want it for their list, they bring it to the acquisitions board meeting, where there'll be people on the board from other editors, there'll be people from the sales force, there'll be the marketing team and the design team, there'll be people from all areas of the company to help decide yay or nay. And so they've got to make a really great case for your book, and it comes down to the numbers. There's a lot of number crunching that happens of how many copies do we think we can sell based on our past experience. So that's how they're going to make that decision. And so sometimes you will find yourself working together with the acquisitions editor to address any concerns they have or ideas they have that they feel would make the book as marketable as possible and also likely to get a yes at their acquisitions meeting.
You are a wealth of information. I can just feel that, yes, you just have so much experience. Do we have time for one more question?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, we have one more about personal essay chapters in a memoir. How do I pull it together?
So, and I saw that question, and, you know, really it comes down to looking at, you know, without knowing about the book, I really can't answer. But what I can say is in a program like this, we're going to help you get clarity about how to structure the book and what is the full concept of the book. And so those are the kind of things that either you can get help in this program, or if you wanted to work with a coach, I could maybe recommend somebody, so you can email me. But certainly those are things we can do. And I just want to answer this one other question.
Yes.
I hope people don't mind, but
yes.
Because Anna has been on the call and waiting. So Anna, you said you're writing a memoir. How do you deal with the fact that others may have different memories of the same event and that you need to be creative about conversations and environments to create interest and enthusiasm? So, you know, you have a couple options, but the most important thing is just to be really honest about things. So you might have a note to readers to say that this memory is to the best of your ability, and other people may remember things slightly differently from you, and that you don't claim to have a perfect memory. People do understand that dialogue is going to be an approximation, that you don't remember word for word what happened, and so, you know, that's okay. There, you get a pass with that. Of course, you don't want to lie about what happened, but the other thing is, if it starts to veer off into creative nonfiction, you know, that's okay too. You can be creative, especially, let's say you're writing about something in the past that you just know kind of hearsay through your grandmother about something that happened to her when she was a child, and she's not around anymore. So you can imagine that scene, and you might even indicate that to the reader, you know, the way I imagine it, and then you talk about what happened with your grandmother and paint a whole picture, but clearly it's your imagination. Or you may just have a note to readers in the beginning of the book saying that, you know, some of the events you were there for, some you weren't, some you may not remember exactly, and, you know, this is to the best of your ability, and so that's another way to deal with, you know, maybe some things that you're not sure of or don't know for fact. So I hope that everyone was able to get what you needed on this call, and that all of you feel inspired to continue with your work. And it is really rewarding to work with a traditional publisher, to work with an agent. And if you are looking for a traditional book deal, then you know this class may be a really great way to do that, to get the guidance you need and support and structure, too, to make it happen. So definitely feel free to email me, lisa@lisatenner.com, and we can explore. I do want to just quickly address the two things on your strategy sheet, which is big takeaways. So if you want to go ahead and write maybe your biggest takeaway from this call, I always find that when we take that moment to put down that takeaway, think about it, that it really helps you own it, right? You remember it better, and you're able to use it in your life. So take a note, your big takeaway, and also your next step. You know, maybe your next step is to explore with me about this course, Fast Track Your Book Proposal. Maybe it's to buy the book that Jody Ryan and Mike Larson wrote, How to Write a Book Proposal. And, you know, maybe it's to start with that, or maybe it's to search my blog and find some relevant posts about book proposals and start there. You know, or maybe it's something else. Maybe you're deciding already to self-publish, but you know, whatever that step is, write down what your next step is going to be, so that you make a commitment tonight to whatever that next step is, and that's going to help you tomorrow morning when you wake up and you say, what am I going to do today? And it's, you know, at the very least, you're going to take that step that you committed to tonight. So I know we had talked about hoping to talk a little bit about, you know, where you get started with a book. And so I'll just say one quick thing about that, and that is start with your vision. What do you want that book to do for you and for your readers and for the world and for your business if you have one? You know, start with that. What's your vision? And that will help guide you. And then you can move to, you know, who's my market? Who am I writing for? And what are they looking for? And think about tone and content and structure. But really start with what's my vision, and that will help guide the whole project. So thank you for taking time tonight to be on this call and for honoring me and everyone else on the call with your presence. And I wish you the absolute best with your book. And please feel free to reach out in any way. I'm always answering questions on the blog and happy to do that if you want to do it that way. And I'm looking forward to being with some of you on this journey in a deeper way and helping you write that proposal and work with agents and publishers and get published traditionally. So have a wonderful night, everyone, and thanks again.